afternoon for you. There'll be plenty of food. So if you want to be there tonight, please come on over to the house after service tonight. Acts chapter 18. And if you want, you can go ahead and take a piece of paper and flip back over to 1 Kings chapter 18 and mark that passage too. We're going to spend our time in those two places this morning. You know we've been covering the book of Acts in the last number of weeks. We've been looking at different things going on in this book and trying to just glean some of the things God would have us understand in our lives. And here we are again in Acts chapter 18. And I want you to think for just a moment. And if you were able to choose a word, or if you were to pick a word that would describe the life of Paul, what word would you choose? A word that would describe what you think of when you think about his life, as we've been looking at his life for that past number of weeks and the things he's going on in his life. What word would you choose? Maybe you would choose the word preaching. He's done a lot of preaching, hasn't he? He's gone from one city to another, from one synagogue to another, to different places, and he's been preaching the same message everywhere. Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. And he's been presenting these lessons to everybody wherever he goes. Maybe you might not choose preaching. Maybe you choose something like committed or strong or some other word that describes some of the things, the attributes in his life. How about the word problem? And you think about Paul's life. You think about all the issues and all the problems that have arisen in his life. Before he became a Christian, and he was one of the leaders in the Jews, people respected him. People loved him. And immediately after he changed his life and he became a child of God, things changed. No longer did the Jews want to have anything to do with him, but not even the Christians wanted anything to do with him because they were afraid of him. And problems arose immediately. And we watch his life develop, and we see his relationship with Barnabas becoming stronger and stronger, and then going from place to place, and everywhere they go, what happens? Problems. Different things arrive, questions come up, and they have to deal with those things. So one after another, one major problem after another comes up, and it happens. Then not only then, if you look a little bit later in his life, they go back to Jerusalem, and there are issues and there are problems going on there. And then, not only in those things around him, but even Paul, like him, Barnabas, have issues. And they break their partnership up and go their own way. And Paul begins with Silas, and they start going on the second missionary journey. And things are happening. And then Paul leaves Timothy and Silas to take care of some things, and he goes on. And he's waiting on them to arrive back with him. And he leaves that, and he goes on down to Corinth, and that's what we find him in Acts the 18th chapter. And so we look at Acts chapter 18, and it says that he met some Jews, verse 2, named Aquila and his wife Priscilla. And they left because Claudius commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. And so they came here, and because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them, and they were working, for by trade they were tent makers. And he was reasoning in the synagogue every Sabbath and trying to persuade both Jews and Greeks. And so Paul, here he is, he's with Priscilla, he's with Aquila, and he's talking, visiting with them, staying with them, and they're making tents. Paul has got to do something in his life with a trade to make enough money to support him and what he's actually wanting to do, and that's preach. So he's working, as we say, kind of burning the candle at both ends, if you will. He's got a lot of things going. And he's committed his life to this teaching, to preaching. And then finally, Timothy and Silas show up. And it says that because they show up, it has allowed him to focus all of his attention on doing what he really wanted to do, and that's to preach the message of Christ. And so he goes and begins preaching all the time. But what's going on with him. And he's preaching, he's teaching, he's trying to educate them. And he loves these people. And every time he goes to preaching, they don't listen. Everywhere he goes, they're stirring up problems. Not all of them, but that group that are vocal, a lot of the teachers who don't want to lose their identity, and they begin following him around, and they begin destroying everything that he's doing. And it says that they're so angry, they're so mad, they're resisting him so strongly that they're even willing to blaspheme against Christ to prove their point. They don't want him. They don't want his ideas or anything that he's talking about. And Paul is so frustrated. And he tells them very simply, your word is on your own. Matter of fact, I don't want anything to do with you anymore. I'm going to go over to the Gentile. I'm not even going to talk to you anymore. I'm not going to waste my time with you because you don't want to know the truth anyway. You ever been so frustrated in your life, been so discouraged that the people that you actually care about in your life are just going, I'm done with you. I'm not going to talk to you anymore. The conversations that we have are so ridiculous that you will refuse to listen. I don't even want to talk to you anymore. And so you think about Paul, and you think about the discouragement that's going on in his life, and how often do we experience those discouraging times in our life? Now, hold that thought. Now flip back over to 1 Kings with me. Discouragement. You look at 1 Kings chapter 18, and this passage 18 and 19 is talking about Elijah. And this is a very common story. I'm sure that everyone here has read this story at some point in your life and studied it. And it's one of my favorite out of the Old Testament. I really like looking at it because it's a really cool story. And manifestly, you're teaching kids some good things, and it's a really visual thing. But Elijah is having conversations with Ahab. And Ahab is the king of Israel. And Ahab is not doing what he's supposed to be doing. Ahab is not leading the people to God. He's leading them further and further away from God. And Elijah is telling the whole time, you've got to stop doing this. This is not what you're about. This is not what we can have anything to do with. We've got to lead the people back to God. So he proposes that they do something. Because he's arguing now with the people, and he tells the people in verse 21, he simply says, how long will you hesitate between two opinions? If the Lord, if he is God, then follow him. But if Baal is, then follow him. Here is the whole issue that's going on right now. People are trying to decide their identity. Do we follow God, or do we accept the Baal also, or do we follow Baal? And so, Elijah is saying, hey, here's what needs to happen. You need to decide right now. So let's have a challenge, okay? Let's have this. And so visually, we look and they're on the mountain, and he says, here's what we'll do. All of you 450 prophets of Baal, you take an ox over here, and you sacrifice it. You cut it up, put it on your altar, but don't light a fire. You call on Baal and let him do it. And then after you have a certain set amount of time, then later on, I'll do the same thing over here, and I'll call on God, the Lord God, and we'll decide who is the God of Israel. We'll let Baal decide, or we'll let God decide who is the God of Israel. And he's called the people to him, and the people are surrounding him, and they're all paying attention, and the prophets of Baal agree, and so there's 450 of them doing this. And you can imagine everyone's anticipation. The people are there. There's a big show about to happen. It's a sporting event almost, if you will. And people are there and they're watching and they're waiting to see. And no one wants to make a commitment yet because they're waiting to see what Baal is going to do or what God is going to do. So the prophets begin hollering. Baal answers them. And it says they go on hour after hour after provoking those prophets. Holler a little louder, he said. Maybe he's asleep. Maybe he's taking a nap. Maybe he's excused himself after he goes to the restroom, he said. Maybe he's gone on a journey. Maybe you need to yell a little louder because he just can't hear you. And so they do it. Longer and longer and longer. Finally, towards the end of the day, he said, enough is enough. Now, everybody gather around. Here's what we're going to do. And he begins preparing his sacrifice. And he begins cutting it up, and he says, he takes 12 stones, representing the 12 tribes, and he rebuilds the altar of God that's been torn down, and he lays down the wood, and he puts the sacrifice on it, and then he tells the people to bring some water. They bring jars. We're not talking about a pitcher, a tea pitcher. These jars, you can see, they say historically something like 20 or maybe 30 gallons of water in each one, and they pour four of them over. He says, that's not enough. Get some more. And so they go fill them again and pour them all over again. He said, that's not enough. Get some more. So they bring it back, and he digs the trench, and they cover everything, and the trench is even full of water. Now then, we have enough water. Now then, he says, in chapter 18, verse 37, O Lord, answer me, that this people may know that you, O Lord, are God, and that you have turned their heart back to you. Elijah says one thing. He wants the people to know the truth. God is the God of Israel. That's the only thing he's wanting to accomplish. He doesn't want anybody patting him on the back. He doesn't want those things. What he's wanting is everybody to see what the prophets of Baal couldn't do, because Baal isn't real. He's not the God of Israel. And he wants them to see that God is real and that he is the God of Israel. And so he calls on God, God, listen to me, not to me, but so the people's hearts will be right and they'll come back to you. And it says, the Lord answered and felt like a consuming fire. And he came down and he consumed everything there, the sacrifice, the wood, the stones, the water, everything. He answered the question that Elijah asked, God, let this people know who's God and Israel. And he let them know. And it says, the people immediately said, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. And they immediately went and got those priests of Baal, and they put them all to death. And so you go, that's it. Elijah did accomplish what he wanted to accomplish. God gave him the answer he was looking for. But immediately after that, what happened? One comes along and says, I don't like what you did. As a matter of fact, I dislike what you did so much, and if I don't do to you by tomorrow what you've done, then may all the things that you've already done to my prophets, those prophets, may all those things be done to me. Jezebel says, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to put you to death for what you've done. And you look and you think, all right, he's had what they had. He's had what the people. God's answered his question. Now Jezebel shows up again. Jezebel is in the middle of it. And now what happens? He begins running. And he runs and he runs. And it says that he goes and he falls down under a tree, lays down under a tree, under a broom tree or a juniper tree, and he goes, I don't even want to live. And an angel of God comes to him, and he lets him rest, and then he wakes him up, and he says, Elijah, I need you to wake up. Here's some food, and here's some water. I need you to eat. And he woke up, and he ate, and he drank, and he immediately fell back to sleep again. And then a little while later, the angel awakens him again and does the same thing. You need to eat, because the journey is long. And so he eats again, and he drinks. And then he says he runs in some 40 days. God finds him in a cave, hiding, because he's sunken into a state of discouragement so deep, he doesn't know how to get out. He's been fighting, he's exhausted, he's tired, he's all of these things, and 40 days later he's in there, and God says,
God answered.
Look at chapter 19, verses 11, 12, 13. God is talking to him. He says this. He says, "Now go and stand in the mountain before the Lord. And behold, the Lord was passing by. And a great and strong wind was rending the mountains and breaking in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake happened." And we know what earthquakes do. We know earthquakes destroy villages, cities, towns. They do all kinds of things. They bring skyscrapers to the ground. They are powerful. And it says an earthquake happened, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And then it says a fire came. And we see the devastation the fire can cause. And so there's a word picture that we're trying to get that God wants us to understand and wants us to see and wants Elijah to see. And he sees he's consuming fire go by and destroy everything in his path. But it says simply, but God, the Lord, was not in the fire. Then after the fire came a gentle breeze. And the God spoke. And God spoke to him. Elijah, don't be afraid. That's what he said. I've always been with you. I've always been around. Don't worry about it. I understand what you're going through. Now, what God says to him, those next few verses, is, Elijah, you're not alone. There are 7,000 others who've never bowed the knee to the Lord. Now, Elijah, I want you to not worry about that. What I want you to focus on is this. I want you to focus on the job that I've given you. I want you to quit running, and I want you to do what a prophet is supposed to do. I want you to go and join teams. As a matter of fact, here are two teams that I need you to go and join. Do your job. And also, I'm going to give you someone else. His name is Elisha. And I want you to anoint him as the next priest to take your place one day. But I want you to be faithful with what I've given you to do. Don't be so discouraged that you quit. But focus on your job at hand, what I've given you to do. Now, notice how similar Elijah and Paul lives, mirrors. Discouragement can happen to anyone. Even if you're known in the Bible as great men of God, men who want to do what's right, men who have given their life to preaching and taking care of God's kingdom and doing all that God's called them to do, they're still discouraged. Why? Well, let me tell you a couple of things about understanding discouragement. One of the things I want you to understand is when we're physically and emotionally tired, we are far more likely to experience discouragement. You think about Elijah's mind, all that day, all the time building up to that time on that mountain between him and all the other prophets. But all day long he's going at it, he's getting everything ready. All the time he's laid himself out there on that entire day. think about being a husband or a father, and how many times do you get discouraged in your life? And you go, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to struggle through all the things in this life. I don't want to have to go through all the things that I'm going through. And you watch and you see how many children are left alone because their fathers don't want to be a father anymore. They don't want to do their responsibilities. They don't want to take those things on. And we see that happening. It's not just men. Women suffer through the same thing. We don't want to be the wives we need to be, that we're called to be. We don't want to be the parents, the mothers that we need to be. That we don't want to take on those responsibilities. We just want to run away from the things that God has given us to do and not do it. When we get in a state of discouragement and frustration, like we see with Paul and Elijah. But it has a tendency to go in every aspect of our life. Workers and jobs do the same thing. I really am so discouraged with this job. I don't want to do it anymore. I just want to leave. I want to go run away and hide. But it goes right on into the church as well. How many times we don't want to do what God's called us to do in the church? I don't want to be a Bible class teacher anymore. I've done it. I've spent my time doing that. And I just don't want to do it anymore. Just not going to. I want to retire. I don't want to go to church. I don't want to go up there every Sunday. That's the only day that I have off during the week. And I want to go because I'm going to sleep in. I want to do my thing. I want to go visit. I want to do whatever it is that I want to go do. I want to do those things because I'm so frustrated because nothing happens anyway. And we get to that point of such deep discouragement, we don't want to do the things God has called us to do in this life. But if you notice what God does in their lives, immediately he tells them, don't be afraid. Keep on doing what you're doing. I've never let you. I've been beside you the entire time. And he puts people in our lives. Elijah, you do your job. Oh, matter of fact, when you get down and you start going back, I'm going to introduce you to a man named Elisha. And Elisha, the friendship that they strike up and they build, distribute. You look at Paul, you have Priscilla, you have Aquila, you have Silas, you have Timothy, you have all these people God's put in his life. And sometimes we get distracted with all the issues that we can't see that God is alive in our lives. And he wants to take care of us. And he wants us to not be so discouraged. And so I want to tell you this morning, we struggle with discouragement. And I know that you have, if you're not right now, you have some point in your life been discouraged. We all have. Discouragement comes easy when we're tired and when we feel all alone. But when you feel all alone and you've been and you're discouraged and you're in that deep, dark place in your life, I want you to remember a few little things. One, God is still God. God has still never let you. He's still in control in this world. And he wants you to realize every single day that you're not alone, that he is with you. And that he's telling you, don't run. Don't run in this life. Don't run away from what I have for you. Don't run away from the life that you're in the middle of. Don't do that. I think if we were to walk around this morning and ask everybody, tell us the things that's going on in your life this week, I honestly think that we would be shocked with how many problems and how many issues this family is dealing with right now that we don't know anything about. And so many times we look at someone else and we say, well, I don't understand why they're not here. I don't understand why they're like they are or what's going on, why they're doing this, why they're saying those things. And we want to look and we want to point fingers. And the thing is, we really don't understand it. We don't know what each other's doing. And when we're down, how many times does anyone know what we're doing? And it's easy to get so discouraged. I don't to do or be who God created you. But you know something? The God has called each one of us, just like he did Elijah, just like he did Paul, just like he has every man and woman that's had a relationship with him since the beginning of time. God, not only of Israel, but of our life. God is in control of our life today. You believe that? If not, you'll run and hide in the cave. And it's a lonely place. It's a lonely place to be away from. And God has never wanted, not for anyone else. He wants a relationship with us. He wants to strengthen us. He wants us to understand and feel the love that He has for us. That's what He wants. Don't run. Be here. Do what I've given you. Just be faithful. Realize I'm right. And come closer to me because I love you and I don't want what this world is like. I want to give you my new life. I don't know where you are in your life. If you're in a place of discouragement right now, there's only one place you can get out of. There's only one way to get out of. You're not going to find that in this world. I guarantee you. But only with God. Only in a relationship with Him. Only when we give ourselves over to Him and we absolutely trust in Him brings out and we'll find our way out of that place. That deep, dark, lonely place that this world wants to hold. If you want out of that place, only God gets you. Now, is it going to be easy? No. There's a lot of things that aren't easy. But God will get us if we have confidence. And that's what He wants. Are you ready to have that kind of relationship? Are you ready to have that kind of dependence on Him? That faith, that trust in Him? That's what He wants. So this morning, if there's anything we can do to help encourage you, get out of that place. That's what we want. We can pray for you. We would love to do that. To feel like we are supposed to be Timothy's, disciples, and all of those others that God has put in each other's lives for encouragement. We need to be that for each other, but always pointing each other right back.